Someone yesterday asked me if I could recommend an idea, a pasuk, perek, in this week's parsha to focus on, to prepare a dvar Torah. And I gave him an answer, which, you know, I said, well, have you gone through the parsha yet? So he said he hadn't. So I said, well, you go through the parsha, and you find what interests you, and then we can build on that. What I didn't tell him was that he doesn't have to go very far in this week's parsha. Virtually every single pasuk, right, has a story to be told in of itself. And I want to focus on a pasuk because of the fact that many, if you will, larger themes that are focused on in the parsha, things that demand further explanation and understanding sometimes aren't, and I want to take the opportunity to focus on one pasuk in the Aliyah of the day, Shlishi, which I think, well, generally speaking, people don't even notice when they're reading through the parsha. Vayavo ben machane Mitzrayim ben machane Yisrael. So the Torah speaks of the malach that God sent between the two camps, the Israelite camp that was fleeing right before the sea split, and the camp of the Egyptians that had reached it. And the angel that had been spoken of in the previous pasuk came between the two camps. Vayhi ha'anan v'hachoshech, vayya'er et halayla. And there was a cloud and darkness and a light, a lightning of the night. V'lo karav ze el ze kol halayla. And the two camps didn't come close one to the other all night long. Basically, on a pshat level, you have the machane of the Mitzrim, the camp of the Egyptians, ready to attack. Yam Suf will split in the morning. So the Egyptians need to be held off. And the angel holds them off. And you can look at the pasuk a little more carefully, and you can say that the Anan and the Choshech is on the Egyptian side. The Egyptians see nothing. They are in the dark, literally. And on the other side, Vayaer et Halayla. And on the other side, there's light on the camp, the side of Bnei Yisrael, for even though they do not yet know how they will be saved, they do know that they will be saved. V'lo karav ze el ze kol halayla. And the two camps do not come close to one another all night long, but they never come close. And so this gives an opportunity for the Midrash to talk about karav ze el ze, not with regard to the camps, but with regard to the malach, with regard to the angel. Because as you said just a few moments ago in Kedusha, quoting the Psukim in Yeshayahu, the Karaze El Zev Yamar, that when the angels sing, they sing it in tandem. And they say Ze El Zev. And the Midrash takes this Ze El Zev, the Lo Karav Ze El Zev, and tells a remarkable story. And the story that the Midrash says is that Bikshu Malachei Asharet, the angels wanted to Latet Shira Lifnei HaMakom, they wanted to give song, say song, before God. Because the angels know, they see whatever angels see, Vayayar Techoshech, Vayayar Telayla, excuse me, they see the light. Bnei Israel perhaps can sense the light. They know the light. They want to give Shira. The lo karav ze el ze kol alayla. And here there are two versions. There's the more famous version, which is for later, and I'm not going to talk about. And that is Ma'asei Yadai Tovim Bayam Va'atem Omrim Shira. My handiworks are drowning in the sea, and you want to sing song? That's for another sicha. But the Medrash Rabbah and Shmot Rabbah gives a different punchline. The punchline, which focuses here pre-Kriyat Yamsuf, it's more correct in terms of the placement, it says, Ligyonatim in Tzaim Bitzara, my legions, Bnei Yisrael, are in tzara, they are in suffering, they are in pain, they are in trauma. Va'atem omrim shira, and you're going to sing songs, now is not the time for shira. What does this midrash try to say? This midrash is trying to say that the angels are spectators. The angels are up wherever angels are. I don't know where angels are. But the angels are doing whatever angels do. They know that the Laila is over. They know that the darkness has been enlightened. They know that the sea is about to split. Bnei Yisrael, at most, have emunah. They have faith. They are bitzara. They are undergoing their trauma at that moment. And the angels want to say, listen, we're the spectators. We know the play. We've read Rivi'i. We've read Chamishi. Right? We read the Parsha like the angels do. We don't feel the tzara of Bnei Yisrael. We don't feel the abject terror that they have at that moment. Because after all, we know that Az Yashir Moshe, Bnei Yisrael, is just around the corner. But they don't know it at that moment. The angels do. God says, keep your celestial mouths shut. Do not speak a word. Lo karav ze el ze kol halayla. As spectators, you don't have a right to speak. Only the participants, only the players, they're the ones. This has a tremendous, tremendous kind of message that resonates every time I think of this midrash. I'm really, I have to admit, touched by it and humbled by it. Because what the midrash is telling us, forget about what it's telling the angels. I don't know what it's telling the angels. Right? That's, you know, the celestial problem, which isn't my problem. What it's telling me is that it's impossible in life, or it's absolutely immoral in life, to be a spectator. It's immoral to be in a position where you do not feel a sense of not simply apathy, that, forget about apathy, but even sympathy for other people without feeling empathy for those people. Without really trying to feel what they are feeling at a given moment. To be on the outside, to be looking in, and to have a certain smugness at times because of that. That is absolutely unacceptable. And it's something which is easier said than done. Because we all are wrapped up in our own worlds. Angels are wrapped up in their worlds. But we have our own tzarot. I don't know if angels have tzarot. We have our tzarot. And because we have our tzarot, we can look at other people's tzarot and not get involved. But the Midrash is telling us, no. Lo karav ze el ze kol alayla. You have to always be involved. Today we are dedicating the learning in the yeshiva. Le'ilui nishmat Tzvi Aryeh ben David Shlomo, a person Howard Kuznets, who those who knew him, and I certainly can say that I was fortunate to be one of the people who knew him, I knew him also as Grandpa Howard. He was a person. I looked at his obituary that was published in the Houston Chronicle, and I was amazed by the amount that one person had accomplished in his life to be reported in the Houston Chronicle. It took a half-page obituary to talk about it. But it wasn't merely a question of accomplishments in life. It was the type of accomplishments that he had. The type of accomplishments that he had was that he worked, basically founded the National Institute in America, National Institute for Public Safety. And there was a quip in the obituary how when he started in 1950, so he made up 50% of the department staff working on the question of pollution in all of the United States. Okay? And because of him, right, there are a whole slew, I don't know how many thousands of thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people are alive today because of the work that he did throughout his career in all sorts of places, that because he was so involved with public safety or involved with caring about other people. But that was only one aspect of it. Another aspect of it was that today's the end of the Shloshim. So 3 weeks ago, a little bit over 3 weeks ago during the Shiva, which was here, so they had to rent a hall for the family members of his brother's family. His brother who lives here, Shibadel L'chaim Arukim, lives here in Yerushalayim, and he had been, from Houston, been personally involved, literally personally involved, with the 100 or 50 or so descendants of his brother, and not only in the ways that you could not possibly imagine, in terms of financial support, moral support, in terms of knowing each and every one of them, in terms of their who they were, and speaking to them on his visits here, little kids, older people, adults, everyone on their own particular level. I don't think that the word apathy or sympathy even was in his vocabulary. He was a man who was empathy in its personification. And you could see it. Every time you would speak to him, and I only knew him casually, but he gave you the sense that you, when you spoke to him, that you were the most important person in the world, and that your concerns were his concerns. And as a result, he touched and impacted on so many people. To learn in his memory is a tremendous zchut for us. But even more important is that we take the way that he lived his life as a life lesson for us. Never be a spectator, Rabotai. Never look aside and assume that someone else's problem isn't your problem. Never even cheer for someone else's future success. Be involved. Make a difference. Make that person's success your success. Have a wonderful day.